With economic turmoil across the Atlantic,
the president looks for opportunity across the Pacific.
From APM, American Public Media, I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. You're listening to the Midday Update from our website, marketplace.org. It is Friday, November 11th. 11-11, Jeremy.
11-11-11. Coming up, they'll be talking about a 21-nation free trade deal in Honolulu this weekend.
Can the U.S. Postal Service be saved? We'll ask the head of UPS.
And as Steve said, it is 11-11-11, and we have full coverage of
full
this
coverage,
huge news event.
Full coverage, team coverage of 11-11-11. All ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune in to Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
Well, a new government was sworn in today in Greece, an interim parliament to oversee more big spending cuts. In Italy this weekend, a new government will likely be sworn in to do many of the same things. And Marketplace's Stephen Beard is with us now from Rome and reports on how that country is literally split on the economy. Hey, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
I know Italy's economic growth hasn't really kept up with its debt. What's driving the big disparity there?
Well, the low growth, largely due to things like excessive regulation, corruption and cronyism, the huge government debt, on the other hand, well, a lot of that has been racked up keeping this country together. Italy has this kind of split economic personality between the north and the south, the relatively rich, productive north and the much poorer south. The government has sent huge amounts of cash from the north down to the south to even things up, and that does account for a lot, but not all, of the debt.
And how do you solve that problem and get Italy back to economic stability?
Of course, it's going to be horrendously difficult. I mean, the government is today racing a raft of austerity measures through the parliament, but it's going to be very difficult. The country is virtually in recession. The tax base is shrinking. The north is suffering too. And as Professor James Woolston of the American University here told me, to make matters worse, the country's best-known manufacturer based in the north, Fiat, is thinking of bailing out.
Fiat itself is possibly going to be leaving Italy. The CEO, Marchionne, has been talking about transferring as much as possible out of Italy.
Fiat is fed up with all the regulation and problems with its labour force. Of course, Italy could solve its debt crisis virtually overnight if the tax-evading Italians paid their tax. They account for about 30% of the economy, but you can't change the habits of a lifetime overnight.
All right. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in Rome. Stephen, thank you so much.
Okay, Steve.
Well, now to the action happening across the other ocean, the Pacific. President Obama heads to Hawaii today to host a summit of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC. It represents 21 economies all along the Pacific Rim. And a big focus of the meeting will be the idea of creating a 21-member free trade zone. For some thoughts on that, we bring in Chris Lowe. He's chief economist with FTN Financial, and he is, unfortunately for him, not in Honolulu today, but rather Connecticut. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, what about this idea of a free trade deal with the Japanese saying this morning they'll consider it? Nine nations are on board. Is that a good idea?
I think it's a great idea. It's going to be a really tough sell because the Asian economies have, many of them have enormous trade barriers. But it's something that seems to be working. And I know Korean companies, for example, were so excited about the free trade deal we just signed with South Korea that they've been gearing up for years, ready to start producing goods. It's a good idea for the U.S., too, because it diversifies us away from China into the rest of Asia, which is a plus.
Well, let's talk about China, because President Obama is going to be talking with the Chinese president tomorrow. What would you tell him to—what is the message the president should bring at this point?
Well, I think one of the most important ones is to remind the Chinese gently that they need us at least as much as we need them. In particular, with Europe doing what Europe's doing at the moment, China is about to lose quite a bit of business in one of its most important markets. So what better time to refocus on the trade relationship with the United States and improve it?
Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
Well, today is Veterans Day, which means, among other things, the post office is closed, Steve. Mm-hmm. But its competitors, FedEx and UPS, are open. Now, you can't really blame the Postal Service. It's expected to announce next week that it lost $10 billion this year. Congress is, of course, trying to figure out what to do about this. And we're going to get some thoughts now on that and more from Scott Davis. He's the CEO of UPS, and he joins us from Atlanta. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, I want to first ask you about the U.S. Postal Service, the financially troubled U.S. Postal Service. Should it be saved?
Well, I think certainly we have a need for the U.S. Postal Service in this country. They have plenty of challenges today, as we all know. But, you know, our relationship with the Postal Service is unusual. We're both a competitor, as you know, but we're also a customer and a vendor. In some areas where the population is not too dense, we will use them for that last mile delivery. And at the same time, we do fly some of their packages around the country. We're customers of each other, as well as being competitors.
Well, what do you think can be done with them? I mean, is there a solution to this other than just getting rid of service all over the place, raising prices?
One of the challenges, frankly, that they have is the universal service and the cost to deliver letters in places like South Dakota and Alaska are far more than the 44-cent stamp. You know, some of those letters may cost you $50 to deliver in Alaska, and they get paid 44 cents.
How's business for you right now at UPS?
It's solid right now. I think the economy, while not growing fast in the United States, is growing. It has stabilized some. I think over the last 4 to 6 weeks, Jeremy, we've seen improving economic signs both in manufacturing and in retail sales. And as we head to our peak season, there's cautious optimism among our customers at this point in time.
Cautious optimism. I mean, we do look at companies like UPS and FedEx as bellwethers of the economy. But frankly, even as you guys have seen an uptick in shipping over the last couple of years, jobs really haven't been growing very rapidly in the U.S.
Well, no, that's been a problem. We're not growing the economy fast enough to reduce unemployment. I've been a pretty outspoken advocate on the need to grow exports out of this country. Today, only 1% of small and medium-sized enterprises export goods, and the fact is 95% of consumers are outside the U.S. So we have to do a better job growing exports if we're going to reduce unemployment.
What are people going to be shipping in 5 or 10 years? I mean, are letters even going to be shipped anymore, or is that all going to be electronic and it's just going to be stuff?
There'll still be some letters out there. I think if you asked this question, Jeremy, 10 years ago, we probably would have said, yeah, there's going to be a lot less, in 2011. The same thing goes as we look 5 and 10 years ahead from now. You're going to see much less in the way of letters and documents being shipped. These will be done more electronically. The beauty of our business, though, is we ship off a lot of packages. They're not digital.
So, not yet, anyway.
Not yet, anyway. So unless they come up with some new technology, we'll be shipping packages for the foreseeable future.
Scott Davis is the CEO of UPS. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Jeremy, it was great. Thank you.
We got the latest reading this morning, Jeremy, on how consumers are feeling from the University of Michigan and Thomson Reuters. Economists, of course, are continuing to look to see if continued uncertainty over the European debt crisis and other things are weighing on many consumer minds. And Jill Schlesinger from CBS MoneyWatch, who is usually with us on Friday, is off this week. But today we have Julie Nieman. Jeremy, whom I think you know very well.
We know Julie well.
That's right, our Tuesday regular. And she's with us this morning to talk about all of that with us from St. Louis. Hey, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So I want to start with Europe because a lot's going on there. And there's been obviously this constant drumbeat of bad news, but it seems so far away. Does that have any sway as to what American consumers are thinking?
Well, consumers really don't care about Europe. The average American doesn't get why the markets are hyperventilating over the daily drama that's going on Europe. What they're really concerned with is our jobs, housing prices, their 401ks. They're all recovering, but income is not. And they really don't see meaningful recovery at this point. It's very, very small. 90% of all consumers still think we're in a recession. So that sentiment hasn't changed at all.
What about retailers? Are they prepared? You know, here we are with the shopping season coming up. Are they prepared for another year of lackluster sales?
Well, the good news is that retailers are looking at consumers scowling, but they're scouring the stores for really good deals. Yeah. And they're spending their savings. It's not going to last for long, but it will help for Christmas. And retailers are looking at a very decent season here. They started the back-to-school season. Right then, they started with the holiday season. They're very promotional. Inventory's in line. But it won't take very much for the in the way of bad news for make the consumers run for the exits again. Right now, they're looking for deals. They are spending. And it looks like just because of the product lineup, you're going to see a decent season this year for Christmas.
Julie Neiman from Smith Moore & Company. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
Well, Julie, Steve, as we mentioned, it is Veterans Day, and there are nearly a million unemployed vets across the country. Now, the U.S. House next week is expected to take up a bill that would offer incentives to employers to hire out-of-work veterans, something President Obama championed earlier this week, and similar to a measure that passed the Senate yesterday. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
The tax credits for employers are generous, more than $5,000 for businesses that hire veterans and over $9,000 to employ disabled vets.
It's about time.
Larry Harris is with USC's Marshall School of Business.
It certainly will encourage an employer to look to a veteran before they look to somebody else.
Lisa Martini is a spokeswoman for the company that owns Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Alamo, and National. The company already employs thousands of vets, about 10% of its workforce. Martini says this bill will help expand that.
For us, it means, you know, that we can continue our recruiting efforts and our hiring efforts.
As the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan wind down, about a million service members are expected to return to civilian life in the next 5 years. Jim Holbrook is with the University of Utah's National Center for Veteran Studies.
There are going to be many fewer jobs available in the military and a lot more people who were in the military who will be looking for employment.
The bill would also provide training and job counseling for veterans. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Well, for your next foray into home decor, Jeremy, ditch the wall art or the fancy vases and do some dinosaur remains. How about that? The bones of anything ending in aurus are all the rage on the market these days. Don't have a lot of cash? You could get a rib, a dinosaur rib, for under $400.
Wow.
Toe bones. How about that? Toe bones go for under $300. Perfect for the coffee table, I think. Some movie stars, such as Leo DiCaprio and Nicolas Cage, are collectors of these kinds of bones. Of course they are. A few years back, they reportedly fought over a Tyrannosaurus Rex skull at a Beverly Hills auction that went for an eye-popping, wait for it now, you ready?
Yeah.
$267,000.
Wow.
For a skull. Or as they say in the interior design business, hat rack.
I'm waiting for Jurassic Park to open, Steve. Happy 11-11-11, Steve.
Wow, I know. Can you believe it's already here, Jeremy?
I know. It's amazing. It's the day we've all been waiting for our whole lives, and it has finally arrived. Well, you might have noticed that all kinds of crazy things were going on today in honor of the date. Couples everywhere from Las Vegas to Hong Kong are rushing to the altar. Lottery ticket sales are reportedly up as people try to cash in on this supposedly lucky date. I hope that they don't all pick 1-1-1-1-1-1-1 because that's probably not going to be the number.
Well, it has just as good a chance as any other number.
Maybe not. You make a good point. I better head out to get some lottery tickets right now. Well, companies, Steve, are cashing in on the value of this date as well. McDonald's franchises in the Chicago area are calling it Fry Day, as in F-R-Y day.
No.
And just think about a bunch of French fries lined up to spell out the date.
Yeah.
Well, in today's Midday Extra, we ask, is today's date really that special, lucrative, valuable for companies. Here to talk about it with us is David Bell, professor of marketing at the Wharton School of Business in Pennsylvania. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
So what kinds of marketing schemes are you seeing attached to this data? Anything else besides the French fries?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a couple of things. I think we're seeing some companies that have products that look like the 11. So that would be the Pocky in Japan. It's a chocolate stick, so they have Stick Day over there.
Stick Day.
And then we're seeing other companies and not really unrelated products like Verizon Wireless launching their Motorola Droid product at 11.11. We've got Energizer Bunny running an 11K race. So I think, you know, there's a lot of companies piling on whether or not their product has any physical relationship to the number 11.
What's the significance, Professor, of this? I mean, yeah, I know it's some sort of it's nifty that you've got three numbers that are the same in the date. I mean, is it superstition? I mean, what is it about this date?
Well, you know, I did a little bit of research on this, guys, and it turns out there's some history. So, you know, 10-10-10, we had the Expo, World Expo, being launched in Shanghai. I couldn't find too much for 999, although I know there's a fellow who's running for president.
Yeah.
Who's,
you hear about it now, for sure.
Got some idea about taxes. And, of course, we had 7707 when a lot of people in the U.S. were lining up to get married. I think among them were Eva Longoria and Tony Parker. So
one of the Kardashians. No, never mind. That was wrong date. I'm sorry.
Well, why would a company get involved in something like this, though? Who are they appealing to?
Is because the number itself is already salient in popular culture, so people are going to talk about it just because we like the idea of symmetry. We like the idea that, you know, something special might happen on a day that's 8-8-0-8. You know, that was certainly the day that we launched the Beijing Olympics, and it's even at 8 p.m. in the evening. So people like the symmetry of numbers. Certain numbers are seen as very, very, you know, auspicious, like sevens. Others are kind of seen as negative and evil, like sixes. So, you know, when it was 6606, people were talking about the end of the world. So I think because it's in the public consciousness, it just gives off marketers an opportunity to kind of latch on to some PR that's already out there. And from the examples we've talked about already, we're seeing companies with both somewhat related and completely unrelated products just essentially trying to launch onto the PR that's already associated with the day.
Have more of these kinds of holidays, Professor, come about in recent years? I'm thinking since the turn of the century, right, it's easier to probably match these numbers because they're lower numbers as opposed to what we were used to in the, you know, latter years of the 20th century, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think also that they're becoming more more salient just because people can talk about them through social media. We can talk about them on the internet. So there's essentially more ways that information about these dates can be distributed, and more potential for interaction as well. And of course, we have the rundown next year to 12-12-12, and then we'll be off this for a while, because I'm sure some of the things that we'll see marketed today will enter into kind of marketing law. You know, some of them may be showing up in textbooks and courses and so forth. So I think there'll be some companies that do stuff today that'll kind of get lucky in that way, that we might be talking about these campaigns even beyond the duration of the date itself.
Professor, any special plans for 11-11-11?
Well, I suppose I should run off to McDonald's and then.
Yeah, I'm craving some French fries right now.
David Bell, professor of marketing at the Wharton School, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Professor.
Thanks very much, guys.
Well, now from the celebration of a great day, Jeremy, to a quiz. As we mentioned, President Obama this weekend hosts the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, the APEC summit going on in Honolulu. And leaders from China and Japan will be there, but also a lot of folks from developing countries will be there as well. And developing countries top today's globalist quiz with Stefan Richter joining us now from theglobalist.com. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Steve. Are you ready for today's quiz?
I am. Hit me with it.
We all hear always about emerging markets, and they are now consuming more and more of the world's stuff.
Yeah.
So my question for you today is, which of the following items does the developed world still account for more than 50% of? Is it A, cars, B, cell phones, C, government debt, or D, exports?
I know emerging markets are buying a lot of cars, so it's not A. Exports.
In 2010 was the first time that the emerging markets beat us at exports. And, you know, they have now over 50%, and that's almost double of the 27% they accounted for in 1990.
I think the logical answer here, Stefan, is government debt.
The developing countries now account for only 17% of all the outstanding government debt.
Many of which are coming to the rescue of certainly European countries with the debt crisis there.
The Chinese put their money wisely into the U.S., have done too much in that, put a little bit more into Europe, but I don't think they're out to rescue anybody. You know, they're smartly looking after their own interests, as do most other developing countries who've learned the hard way that having too much debt can be detrimental to your future.
Well, all right, government debt. We're going to keep an eye on that. Of course, a story that, it's the gift that keeps on taking. So, Stefan Richter, thank you so much for joining us today with that.
And I'm much indebted for putting me on.
And finally, Steve, Stefan, let's head to Sweden, where the transit authorities are grappling with a new kind of freeloader.
Uh-oh.
Pigeons.
Oh, no.
Apparently, Steve, a flock of clever and hungry pigeons are sneaking past the turnstiles into the subway.
How can they get through those turnstiles?
I know. I don't know how they've managed to get through there. Waiting for the subway train, patiently,
calmly,
boarding the train, and then getting off at the next stop, which just happens to be home to a mall with lots of cafes and food. Now, it's understandable. I mean, I guess we used to have carrier pigeons, right?
Right,
so pigeons
right.
are smart enough to
yeah.
figure this out.
Yeah.
But what I'd like to know is, why do they ever get back on the train and go home?
Well, maybe they don't. Maybe it's just a giant migration.
To the mall?
We should take a census count of all the pigeons at the shopping mall today.
That's
and
right.
see like if a year from now it's like exponentially gone higher.
I'll see you in Sweden, Steve.
I'm on the story.
On the story. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Enjoy your weekend. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.